The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the program today. I have on the line with me Jill Aragon Neely. Jill is a doctor. I should be using that phrase, Dr. Neely, here. She is a doctor along with her doctor husband as well, and originally from Nicaragua, is calling today from Birmingham, Alabama, but very soon, in the first part of October, she's going to be joining back with her country again and serving over there, and that's part of the story that we're going to be hearing today from Jill Aragon Neely. Welcome to my program, Jill.
Thank you so much for having me. Very excited to be with y'all and share what the Lord is doing in our lives.
Well, you know, when I get to talk to people like yourself, and I'm not really sure how Brittany became aware of you and your story, our own Brittany Parks, but she was the one telling me about you. I have in my hands right now your prayer card, which is calling out for prayer for you and your husband and your delightful twins. They're beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. The Lord truly has blessed us. Yeah, I had the opportunity to share my testimony at a recent missionary banquet, and that's where I met Brittany, and I'm just very excited to be here and share with y'all.
Oh, so you were involved with Missionary Ventures then?
Yeah, I was the guest speaker for the recent banquet. I went to one of the schools in Nicaragua that they sponsor called Nicaragua Christian Academy. And it was that school and many missionaries that they sponsor that sort of led me to my journey in the U.S. And I'd be more than happy to, you know, start telling you the story. There's so many steps. So you tell me.
Oh, there's so much here. I'm excited to get to talk with you. And that's really, absolutely, that's really great. That explains that connection. And that's really wonderful that Brittany got to hear your story there as well. And we love the people over at that wonderful place, Missionary Ventures. We've had Bill on, Bill Snell, and also Betty Sue Caners has been on my program before, and I'm getting ready to have an interview with Gus Ramirez, who I know is, he's involved with that as well. So your story is so wonderful. It is just beautiful. You grew up in Managua. So tell me a little bit about what it was like growing up there and your family background and how you came to know the Lord.
Yeah, so I actually grew up in Managua in an atheist family. My dad was very involved in the military in Nicaragua, and he was a Marxist communist revolutionary that fought in the war. In fact, he trained in Cuba and came back and was in charge of training some of the troops in Nicaragua on Marxism. So whereas most kids will, you know, be reading the Bible at night, like we actually were learning communism at home. You know, that's kind of the philosophy that we grew up with. But Dad was a very smart man and was always reading. And when I was 11 years old, he, through a sequence of miracles, and this will have to be like another story because his testimony is quite powerful. The Lord just kept calling him with Bible verses that he would randomly hear at different places. And he was so intrigued by them that he actually found a Bible that somebody had gifted us a long time ago in our house. And he started reading the Bible on his own. And as he read the Bible, he just started being transformed by God. And all these people would come and share the gospel with him that, you know, our neighbors were Christians, and then we had some cousins that were Christians. But every time that they would come, he would just kind of like kick them out and be like, you know, we don't believe in that. We think that God is just to make people feel better. But then eventually one of his friends who had gone to war with him became a pastor, and he invited him to a church. And it was then when, through this guy that he truly trusted, the Lord brought him to him. And my dad is the kind of man that when he believes in something, like, he will give it his all. And he just went crazy after Christ.
I love that story.
Yeah. He's now a Christian pastor and has a beautiful ministry in Nicaragua. But because he'd been doing all this work on us, you know, telling us how, you know, knowledge was truly all that we needed, when he actually came to tell us the gospel, I was 11, my brothers were 18 and 21. We weren't really ready for it. We thought he was just on a phase, or, you know, like something was going on in his mind. And
yeah,
he
this wouldn't last, huh?
It wouldn't last, yeah. So one day he said, you know, you guys have two choices. You can either wash all the dishes after dinner, or you can come to church with me. And that was an easy decision for us. We're like, okay, we'll go to church with you. So we went with him, you know, reluctantly. And our church was having like 50 days of services, like on the streets. They were celebrating like the Jubilee. And I remember like sitting like outside of somebody's house and just listening to the gospel for the first time and being completely moved. And, you know, in my head, I always thought that if I was a good enough person that I would achieve something with my life. But when I heard about like God's love and how he didn't need me to do anything but like receive that love from the Lord and forgiveness, like, there was just so much freedom and so much joy. And when they asked if we wanted to raise our hands, I remember thinking, if I do, my brothers are going to make so much fun of me. And I always looked after my brothers, but I did anyway. And when I opened my eyes, I saw that their hands were up too.
Oh.
And that night, like, all three of us became Christians.
That is such an amazing thing. And what a difference it had to be for you kids, you and your brothers, to see your dad in such a different light and with a different belief system than what he had before.
It was shocking, to be honest with you. You know, my dad, he had struggled with many things, including alcoholism. But he had been trying. He's been going to AA for the past year. So he was trying to get his life in order. But we were just surprised at how he truly had this calling from the Lord, and he would pray with us every night. Like, our prayers were childish at the beginning because we didn't even know how to pray. You know, we had to start from scratch.
Well, you had no background at all. You're hearing all of this for the very first time.
No background.
Yeah,
exactly. But there was so much joy, and it felt like hope, you know, had descended into our family. Like, we were just so hopeful and so excited to be, to get to know Christ. And the more we got to know him, like, the more that we felt his love and power. And I mean, there's so many testimonies. Like, we were very poor. So because my dad had this crazy life, like, we had lost our home. We had lost our businesses, which we were staying with my grandmother. Because we were homeless at the time, and we had no money. He had no job other than teaching here and there. And to go to church, we had to, you know, spend money to get on a bus. And one night, Dad said, we have to go to church, but we have no money to come back home. And the church was maybe 5 miles from where we lived. So we said, you know, let's just all go and we'll walk back. And we need to be there. So we went, and when we actually got to church, we had this beautiful service. We're all getting ready to walk back, and this brother just came and, you know, gave my dad the exact amount of money that he needed to get back on the bus. And he was like, the Lord told me to give you this amount exactly, and I'm just being obedient to him. And God just showed up every single time.
My goodness. Yeah. What a story. And to realize the change in your dad, he's still with us today, right?
Yeah, he's with us. And, you know, again, like, we would need hours to talk about how God has truly used that man. Like, he is, so eventually he sold absolutely the very few things that we had, and he found this community where people didn't know how to read and write in Nicaragua. And he said, you know, like, I don't have a full-time job, but I know how to read and write, and I'm a professor. So I'm going to start teaching everyone in this community, because there were 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds that didn't even know how to write their name. So he would take us every afternoon to this, like, community that was about 30 minutes from the capital. And, you know, I was 11, 12 years old teaching 60-year-olds how to read and write. And as we taught them, we shared the gospel with them, and they became Christians. And eventually that flourished into a beautiful ministry of, now it's like a high school, like a school from kindergarten to high school, a devotion. They also have a church and a feeding center, and other ministries, and they live there now in that community full time and have been serving for the past 20 years. And some of the kids in that community that, you know, started with us in kindergarten are now teachers of the school. And it's just been beautiful to see how God has used my family, my mom and dad, to transform this community in Cedro Galán.
It really does go to show that we never know what one life being changed by the Lord is going to do, not only in their life and impacting their own family, but then beyond that, the community around them or the extended family members and friends. We just never know what act of kindness that the Lord may put upon our hearts. And even to hear you tell the story about how that this individual that did not know you, did not know your dad, but is at a meeting with you and just felt like out of obedience to the Lord, gave you money for a bus fare back home. That is such an encouraging story when people are saying, Lord, are you listening? Or do you hear? He does. He hears. He listens.
Amen. So it was kind of, you know, because of that I've seen God work in our lives so powerfully, and especially like in my dad's life, that I knew that he had something special for me too, you know, and I claimed that. And I said, Lord, like, I want you to make it loud and clear. You know, for my dad, it was education. It was disciple in this community. And I was like, what do you want from me? And I remember being very young, 11, 12, and just praying, would you just make that clear? You know, would you call me like you call all these people in the Bible, and you told them, you know, Samuel and David, and I want that calling in my life. And it was around that time where our church had a group from Florida, actually, and they were doing some medical missions in Matagalpa, which is the mountains of Nicaragua. And I didn't speak English or anything, but I went with them just to kind of help take vitals and help with the patients. And when I was there, I remember our little van, like, arriving into this community, and it was around 6 a.m, and there were literally hundreds of people already lined up waiting to see the doctor. And as the day went by, you know, the doctor had seen, there was one doctor only, and that doctor had seen so many people. But there were so many more that kept coming, and we had to tell those people, you know, you have to wait until tomorrow. And my heart broke for them, because they had walked for miles and miles just to see this physician, but there was only so much this doctor could do in 24 hours. And I remember God saying, I am calling you to serve them. I'm calling you to serve your people as a physician. And it was so loud and clear.
How old were you at this point, Jill?
You know, I think I was probably about 12, because we only been Christians for about a year. And I came back home and I told my dad, I know exactly what I'm going to do in my life. Like, the Lord just made it clear. And he was like, what is it? You know, because we talked about me being a teacher or an engineer, because I was very good at math. And I said, you know, I'm going to be an American doctor, not just any doctor, but an American doctor. And the reason I think I said that is because I seen the love and compassion that this missionary doctor had for everyone there, even though he was so tired, you know, he just loved and prayed for every one of his patients. And I wanted to be just like that one doctor.
So basically you meant trained in America, not necessarily being a doctor.
Trained in America.
You're right. Wow. That is, at 12 years old, those are some heady decisions and some heady thinking that you did back in that time.
Yeah. Yeah. So my dad said, that isn't a great idea. You know, I think you can do it, but there is one problem. And I was like, what is it? Well, you don't speak English. And then I was like, yeah, that's a good point. If I want to be an American doctor, I have to find a way to learn the language. So I started that time trying to teach myself as much as I could. And my dad had gotten a job teaching Spanish to this new missionary family, the Lofgaards. And every time we had to drive to their house, we would drive by this bilingual Christian school called Nicaragua Christian Academy. And every time we drove by it, I would just pray and say, Lord, I pray that one day I can go to that school. I pray that one day you would open a door there. It was completely unaffordable for our family. But it just so happens that the missionaries that he was teaching them Spanish to were actually on the board of directors of that school.
Oh no, I know.
One of them was actually the president of the board of directors. And when they heard my story, they really did everything they could to get me in. So they were able to find sponsors. And I was a very good student at the time. So their fear was that if I went to a bilingual school, that I wouldn't do well academically and it would end up hurting my chances of going to college. So they gave me a 6-month trial period where mm-hmm. they said, you know, she completely flunks, like does not do well, you know, we will just delete that semester and she can go back to Nicaraguan school or she can continue with us. So at that point, this was 9th grade. So it's been like 3 years since I had that calling from the Lord. And I went and I remember being completely terrified because I've seen like in the American movies how high school could be, you know, so brutal. But everyone was very kind and very sweet. I met my very best friends there and they helped me interpret my homework. You know, they would just interpret all the instructions from the teachers because a lot of times I had no idea what they were saying. And I worked really, really hard. You know, I would ask the teacher for extra homework so I could, like, work on my language skills. And by the end of that semester, I actually ended up with all A's. so I was able to say, by the grace of the Lord, honestly, I don't know how. And later on, actually became the valedictorian of our class.
My goodness. Well, we're going to pick this up in the next segment. This is so great. Jill Aragon Neely, my guest today, Nicaraguan, and turned to be a doctor trained in America on her way back to her home country to serve the Lord and to help people. We'll be back with her in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. I am on the line today with Jill Neely. Jill is in Birmingham, Alabama, as we are talking, but not for long. If you were listening in segment one, heard her story, born and raised in Managua, Nicaragua, and her dad became a believer, an amazing testimony in and of itself of his conversion to Christianity and its impact on Jill and her brothers at a very young age, at age 11, at age 12. She hears a real call from the Lord to become a physician, not just any physician, but one trained in America, did not know English, but through just, again, the amazing grace of God, a prayer that, Jill, you uttered that prayer as you passed that school. On your way to a different location, you would pass and say, Lord, open the door. And he did.
Amen.
That is a great story. And you met friends there. And when we ended the first segment, you were telling us that your friends helped you and you ultimately did so well that you became the valedictorian of the class and you learned English. How long did it take you before you were really comfortable at learning that English language? And I have a feeling I'm going to feel pretty bad after this answer.
I don't know, you know, I feel like I'm still learning, to be honest with you. But, you know, I was able to actually take like AP classes towards the end of my high school in English and math and all that and did well. But it's a little different when you're in Nicaragua because they're, I could speak Spanish, you know, in the middle of classes to all my classmates because they were all bilingual. So I learned like a lot of formal English and like what you would do for like biology and math. But I actually didn't know the slang, which I learned when I moved to the U.S. that I didn't speak as much as I thought.
Yeah, that is the hardest part. You know, when I was studying German in high school, our teacher was telling us there that very thing about the, you know, the sense of slang and kind of everyday usage of language. And she gave the example that if you used a phrase that Americans would regularly use, like, well, that person's up a creek without a paddle, meaning that they're in trouble. They don't know just exactly how bad trouble they're in. But that, you know, when you don't know the slang, you don't know the expression. It really is a difficult language to get your brain around, and you've got to learn all those expressions. And what is the difference in literal versus expression?
Yes, and that, of course, and I'll tell you eventually how I got to Birmingham, but that when I came here, I remember everyone using the word y'all and bless your heart. And I kept looking at, like, in my head, I'm like, I have no idea what they're saying. And, you know, I would, like, look it up in my little dictionary because this was before we all had, like, smartphones, and I couldn't find the actual meaning. So I was very confused when I moved to the South. But going back to the story, so I was, you know, graduate and valedictorian of my class, and it was about April. And everyone in my entire graduating class already had incredible plans for as to where they'll go to college. You know, most of these kids were missionary kids or their parents were wealthy Nicaraguans, and they had opportunities in Europe and Canada and the U.S. and really good schools in Nicaragua. But my parents were building this community, teaching the poor and not making any money from that. So they had no resources to send me to college. And I remember, you know, feeling a little bit sad that I had worked so hard and there weren't any opportunities for me to go to college in the U.S. Because even though I've been accepted to schools and even though I've gotten some pretty good scholarships, just living expenses alone, like, we could not pay for that. So I pray and I was like, God, if, you know, you have been with me every step of the way, and I just pray that you will somehow provide. And it was around May of my senior year, just right before graduation, when this Dr. Frank Page from Birmingham, Alabama, had been commissioned by his church to go find a potential new place for them to bring a medical mission team. So he heard about NCA, which is the school that I went to, where I was graduating from, and he came and he saw the school, and he felt like, even though that was a beautiful school, he didn't feel like there was a huge need for them. So he kind of thought, you know, that was like the end of his trip and he will look for a different location. But he was talking to the director of my high school, Greg Kynas. And Greg was telling him my story because it just so happened that day there was like a fair with a 5K, and I literally like ran by them, and he was like, oh, this is Jill Neely, Jill Aragon at the time, and she's graduating as valedictorian of her class, and I just wish somebody would give her a chance. And he told him, you know, how hard I've been working, and he was like, I guarantee her, like, I think she will do well if somebody just gives her a chance. And Dr. Page was so moved by those words that, you know, this director said, I'll guarantee her, that he fell in his heart, that he had to figure out a way to help me. And, you know, he had two kids in college at the time and one kid going to like private school. So financially, it didn't make sense for his family to help. But he said he just felt like the Lord was really, really calling him to do that. So he offered for me to go live with them for a year and go to a community college. And then we'll just see what happens from there. So this was another thing where I had to like kind of walk on faith because, you know, here I was like, Father turned on my class, like all these kids were going to wonderful colleges. And I had this opportunity to go to a community college,
right,
which wasn't as prestigious. But I really felt like the Lord was calling me in that direction. So I came to Birmingham, you know, had never left my family. This was the first time we've been separated.
And how old are you at this point now, Jill?
At this point, I just turned 18.
Okay.
And I am, completely terrified. Like I met Dr. Page, but I hadn't met his entire family. I go from being in rural Nicaragua. Our home in Nicaragua was a mission home that they had built for us to help the people there. It didn't even have windows. Like, we just had, like, bars. Very poor, to all of a sudden, like, Mountain Brook, Alabama, which is one of the wealthiest neighborhoods in the U.S. Per capita. And, yeah, that was, like, culture shock for sure.
Yeah.
But,
what a difference. Yeah. What a difference. So you come and you get to go and you're attending community college and getting those prereqs out of the way, still with a heart to become a doctor and to go into medical school. So you've got a long ways yet to go, but that was a good start.
That was a great start. And I was so grateful. And honestly, the college, it wasn't even like the actual community college. This was like a satellite of a community college. So it was like really small. And, you know, I was highly motivated. I gave him my all, and I was blessed that the teachers in that community college were phenomenal. Like, they were retired PhDs and professors that just wanted to give back to the community. And they spent so much time tutoring me in like physics, biology, all this difficult sciences, and, you know, show a lot of motivation. And I was I worked really, really hard. And by the end of that year, the Lord blessed me and I was able to have the highest GPA in that community college.
Oh, my goodness.
So that opened up a lot of new opportunities, including, you know, conversations with the local college, Samford University.
Mm-hmm.
And the other wonderful thing is that I was placed at my host family went to this church called Brookwood Baptist, and the church was so mission-minded, but also the president of Samford actually went to that church, and because I had shared my testimony there, he had heard my story. And eventually, I was able to get a full ride to Samford University.
That's so amazing. I love this story. God bless you. You know, it's the combination of all of these things. You work so hard. And so, you it's not like this was just handed to you on a silver platter, but it is the grace of God at the same time, because so many aspects, Jill, of your story had to do with God intervening, like that doctor who visited Nicaragua and wanted to help you. And you live with him for a couple of years, and you know, just your willingness to go to a community college when all your friends are going to highbrow universities and you're at a community college, but God intervened and used it all. That is such a great story. And you graduate from Samford. Now you got your undergraduate degree. Did you stay there to go on to med school?
No. So then, you know, this story has so many miracles along the way. But so I went to Samford, and at Samford, I said, you know, I want to be a doctor. I've been called to be a physician. Surprisingly, though, my counselors and advisors all thought that I shouldn't pursue medical school because being foreign, my chances of getting in were less than 1%. So they like, since you're having a full ride to such a prestigious university in Alabama, you know, you should take full advantage and maybe do pharmacy school or nursing school or one of our other programs that, you know, for sure will give you a job after you're done. So for like a second, for like one semester, I was like, okay, you know, like I understand where they're coming from, and ended up enrolling in nursing school. And then after that, I told them, you know, this is not my calling. I respect nurses. I think they're doing an amazing job, but God called me to be a physician. And all my advisors thought that, you know, I had gone crazy, that, you know, as a foreign student, even if I got in, I would never be able to pay for tuition. And against their advice, I basically, and even Dr. Page, my host, who's a physician too, like he was in the admissions committee at UAB, and he told me UAB does not accept foreign students. It doesn't matter how good you are, they just don't take any foreign students because there's so many U.S. applicants. But I felt in my heart that God was calling me to do that. So mm-hmm. I started tutoring and saving all the money that I could just to pay for the MCAT, which is the test that you need to get into medical school. And then I took the test and did well enough to apply to medical school. And I started looking at all my options. And the average applicant for med school, they will apply anywhere from 30 to 50 schools because it's very hard to get in. I could only afford to pay for 3. So I was like, well, Lord, you know, here we go. If it's meant to be, you're just going to open a door somewhere. And the schools that I applied to were UAB, because it was in Birmingham, at Vanderbilt, and Dartmouth. And the main reason was because I had friends in those cities if I ended up getting into one of the schools. Well, UAB was the first one to respond to me, and they said, we will not even review your application. We don't take foreign students, you know. End of story. So that door was closed. I had not heard from Dartmouth, and it was almost like the end of interview season. And then I got a letter from Vanderbilt saying that they wanted to interview me. So I went to my interview at Vanderbilt, and it was, you know, of course, always a little bit dramatic, like it snowed and nobody can drive in the snow. The interview had been canceled, all those things. But they postponed, and I was supposed to interview with a urologist from Russia who is well-known at Vanderbilt. And I don't know anything about urology, but I was trying to read all his papers that were very complex. And I showed up to my interview. They're like, he's sick. He can't interview you. So we have someone covering for him. And it just so happens that the person who interviewed me that day was a pediatrician who was also a strong Christian and had done medical missions in Nicaragua and all over the world.
Once again, yeah. The hand of God is on this.
Amen. Yeah. So we, you know, we had the best conversation, and it went very well. And 2 weeks later, I get a phone call saying that not only I had been accepted into Vanderbilt School of Medicine at the time, you know, one of the top 10 medical schools in the U.S., but also they were giving me 80% tuition to cover for all my expenses.
Oh, my goodness.
So the wow. Lord truly moved.
He did. And you're in Music City, USA then.
Yes, I was. And then, but then, you know, the thing is, okay, I got in, I had 80% of my tuition cover, but in order for me to study in the U.S. as a foreign person, I had to prove that I can pay for every year of medical school, including living expenses up front, so they can give me a student visa. So I got into med school, I think it was like March or April. By July, I had to have raised the other 20% that was not covered by tuition plus living expenses.
Mm-hmm.
So I started then this campaign all over the U.S. Like, I went and spoke at churches and shared my story and started raising money. I think at that time I needed like $50,000 to complete. And God just provided. And it was like 2 or 3 days before I had to submit my visa application. And I was still missing like $10,000, $12,000. And then I randomly met somebody on the plane and I shared my story with this person. And he just so happened to be an oil man who had a very good business. And he wrote me a check for the remainder of the money.
My goodness.
So God just, you know, like the way that he showed up, like it was very clear to me that he was doing all this. And that somehow I had to figure out a way to, no matter what, like stick to my calling.
You know, this is such a beautiful picture for anyone who's listening who it might be facing some impossible things. And I just believe that your story is going to speak faith to them to not waver in their trust of the Lord, to not stop believing that God can hear their prayer and answer their prayer as he has answered yours. And when we come back with Jill, she's going to be telling us about the trip that she and her husband are about to make. We've got to hear that story too, how she met her husband. That's all coming up. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're on the Shepherd Radio Network. I'm with Jill Aragon Neely. She is a physician that is getting ready to make a big move to go serve her home nation, which is in Nicaragua. And she's just been telling us this amazing story of how she ended up in Birmingham and then getting a degree at Vandy, a medical degree. It's just such an amazing story about God's provision, God's timing, God's way. And this is a young lady that you've met your husband, who is in America, was in America, born and raised in America. How did you meet him?
That's a great story. So my husband is from Huntsville, Alabama. He's a very white, blonde, blue-eyed boy who always had a heart for Latin America. And God had called him to also be a missionary to Latin America. And he went on a medical mission trip to the Dominican Republic and met my best friend from Stanford. And he, at that time, was a first-year medical student at UAB. And when my friend came back from that trip, she just kept talking about this guy. And she's like, I think he would be the perfect guy for you. And then his friends, I had been going to the Christian Medical Association Bible study. And I shared my testimony there. And his friends came home and they were like, you know, that girl that gave her testimony and you weren't there, she's going to be your future wife. So our friends really thought that we would be perfect for each other. But for about a year, we could not meet each other because he was always studying or I was always studying, and we would somehow miss that event where we were supposed to be there at the same time. And then finally one night, the Christian Medical Association was hosting like a salsa party, and I met him there. And I remember we just kind of talked all night about our dreams and plans to be medical missionaries. And his Spanish was beautiful, and I had a list of things that I, you know, had prayed specifically about for my husband. And it was like every little thing that I had prayed for that night, like I could just see in him, like little things like that he liked to play guitar, because I always loved that about like my dad, or, you know, he liked soccer and spoke Spanish and, of course, was a godly man. So after that, he didn't, of course, like call right away or anything. So I was just kind of like, well, maybe it won't work out. But he said that night he felt that God told him that I would be his wife. So he had gone and prayed. Because he wasn't ready to start a relationship in medical school, but he felt that, you know, the Lord was calling him to be with me. So after maybe 2 or 3 weeks, he finally called me, and then we kind of started like a courtship, and I would say we got engaged like a year and a half later and then married a year after that.
Oh, that's so great. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
And what's his first name?
His first name is David, David Neely. And the beautiful thing about this is that I, you know, we both went to residency. I did internal medicine. David is incredibly smart, and he was top of his class and did the hardest thing he could do, which was retina surgery. He had to do many years of training for that, and he just finished like 2 years ago. And as we were almost done with residency, getting ready to go back to Nicaragua in one form or another, Nicaragua went through some very tough political times, and we weren't really, it was not the right time to come back. So we just kept praying and once again asking God, can you please make it loud and clear as to how we're going to go back to Nicaragua? And if not Nicaragua, and maybe you're calling us somewhere else in the world, like, we ask that you will open jobs for both of us. But it became very difficult because my husband is like an eye ninja. It's like so specialized that for him to do the kind of surgeries that he needs to do to help people recover their vision, he needs really, really expensive equipment, like $50,000, $60,000 machines that most hospitals in the world don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought that maybe then he would just have to practice like a general ophthalmologist, which would be fine. But it wasn't, you know, then it's like, why would he go through all these years of training? So, you know, that's our journey and our prayer. And on the other side of things, there's this group called Chosen, the Christian Ophthalmic Surgery Expedition Network, and they're in Texas. And they had opened an eye hospital in Mexico, and things in Mexico were going okay, but they wanted to really minister to the poorest of the poor. And they said, where is the poorest country in Latin America? Well, that would be Haiti. And they tried to do something in Haiti, but there was too much corruption, and mm-hmm. they couldn't make it work. So they decided then to look at the second poorest country, which was Nicaragua. And there they had all the doors open. They had built this absolutely gorgeous eye hospital with all the equipment that my husband would need for surgeries. Like, they had been able to import all that, put all that in the hospital. But they could not find someone to staff it because most retina surgeons in the U.S., you know, they can stay here and make a pretty good living. So most of them don't really want to be missionaries. So they just kept praying that maybe someone from Mexico or Nicaragua would be willing to lead that hospital. But they were not having any open doors with that. So it was around that time that one of their partners had heard that David liked to do medical missions. And he was like, hey, we do short-term medical missions to Mexico. But, you know, we're also opening a hospital in Nicaragua. Have you ever heard of Nicaragua? And David was like, well, actually, my wife is from there. And that is where we would like to go back and serve. And that's kind of how we met Chosen. And they were just excited that, you know, our calling has always been Nicaragua, that David is exactly what they needed, a retina-trained surgeon to operate all those fancy machines that they have. And that in addition, you know, that I'm a native from there, and they wanted me to help run the hospital and be the medical director and also assist some of our patients with diabetes, hypertension, and other illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided, yeah, to just go with them. And the surgeries in Nicaragua, this is in a place called Chinandega. The surgeries will be completely free to all the patients, but the patients have to, we're working with the local doctors, so we're not trying to take away patients. But the ones that they can help, because they need a more complex surgery, that will come to us and they'll be referred by the local ophthalmologist. But the biggest part of the project, you know, it's not just to restore their physical vision, but their spiritual vision too.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be a chaplain on site that will be praying for all the patients and sharing the gospel. And we actually asked you to pray. And if anyone is willing, like, we're actually looking for that chaplain actively right now. This will be an open, like, paid position. We have not found one yet, but mm-hmm. we're praying that God will provide a bilingual person to be a missionary with us in Nicaragua and serve the people there.
And exactly what would their responsibilities be?
for the chaplain, basically they will minister to our patients.
Okay, so, a chaplain. Okay, I heard it that time. I got it. Yeah. So someone that is having a real perhaps call on their life, maybe it's working its way out right now. God's just allowing you to have a burden, and they need someone to join the team in Nicaragua, along with David and with Jill. And this amazing story, it just keeps on coming from the standpoint of God's provision, God's timing, all of the equipment necessary for the elaborate and very just exacting type of details that a surgeon like you guys, a person like your husband who works on the retina, and it just is a very, very intense amount of equipment needed for all of that. And God has provided it. And God will certainly meet the need with a chaplain as well.
Amen. We strongly believe that too. And so it's just a joy that, you know, we're going back. And what I love the most about this story is, you know, to be 100% honest with you, I am very happy in the U.S. Like, I work at UAB, which is the third largest public hospital in the U.S. I am a hospitalist. I see a lot of, right now, a lot of what we're seeing is COVID. But I do feel like I have a pretty strong ministry here. Like, I'm able to pray for my patients. You know, I'm able to witness to my coworkers. And I'm still able to take medical teams to Nicaragua. In addition to that, I lead a global health fellowship, and with my fellows, basically, I'm trying to train them to be effective international doctors, and they learn ultrasound and wound care, and that's kind of been my ministry. So when God was calling us back to go to Nicaragua, you know, I'll be honest with you, I was a little bit hesitant because I have such a good thing going on in the U.S., but the Lord, of course, continues to bless that. And I love that it was through my husband that we're going back.
Yes.
Like, it, you know, and how perfect that was. But, you know, I feel like had I been completely alone, even though I always had this dream of going back, it just seems a lot harder to leave once you're well established. But I love how God is bringing me back because of my husband and his training and his skills.
That's wonderful.
Amen.
Now people can actually support this mission work that's going on, and I know that you would welcome that, and perhaps we can put the QR code on our Facebook page, and if anybody would like to donate to the work that you and your husband will be doing, you're going over, I think it is on the 8th of October, is that correct?
Yeah, we leave October 8th. We're really excited. Yeah, just keep us in your prayers. And the other ministry that I didn't talk about, but that we'll be doing as well, is starting the Christian Medical Association in Nicaragua and also discipling the medical students. And that I'm super excited about because I feel like teaching is definitely my calling.
You know, when I think of about a person like yourself who you've been the recipient and now you're going to go and be able to give back in ways to your people, what advice, what encouragement would you give young people that might be listening right now that would push them into this thing of trusting the Lord the way you've been able to do?
I think for me, is learning how God talks to you. I feel like God is very wise, and he talks to each one of us in ways that we would listen. Like, I don't get subtle messages. For me, it has to be very loud and clear, and I have seen his messages that way. And when you figure out how he talks to you and you hear that calling, you know, don't give up on that calling. Mm-hmm. It's not easy, right? God never asked you to do all these things super easily, but he always provides. Like, if you think of all the people that have done amazing things, like, you know, Peter had to step out and like walk on water. Like, that sounds ridiculous and crazy, but God provided for him. Or Daniel sitting with the lions, you know, like, that sounds insane, but yet God protected him and provided. So whatever that calling is, no matter how crazy it sounds to the world, if you know that it's from God, like, keep going for it. He will open one door at a time. It won't be 10 doors at once. It won't be that way. But every door, you know, will lead you to the next one, and you just persevere. And in my case, you know, it's taken, because of all the training we've done, 16 years to go back. But I'm super excited that, you know, we'll finally be there and serving and going for full circle.
That's tremendous. And they'll be there for a term of at least 5 years, occasionally coming back to the States, obviously. But my goodness, we wish you the best. Give us the website where people can contact and keep up with you.
Absolutely. If you would like to subscribe to our newsletter, it's Neely, N-E-E-L-Y dot Nicaragua, N-I-C-A-R-A-G-U-A at gmail.com. Neely.Nicaragua@gmail.com. And just send us a message, and we will add you to our newsletter. And then I think you said you'll share the QR code, and that would also give more information about us.
That's right. And we just really thank you for being with us today on the program, Jill. Jill Aragon Neely, you have our prayers. We'll be praying for you and David and the fine work that you're going to be doing for the Lord, asking God to send you a chaplain along with you for the team to be complete. And thanks for spending the time with me here today.
Thank you so much. I have really enjoyed it, and I pray that the Lord will bless you and all your listeners today.
Thank you. God bless you. And friends, thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.